It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 12th day of September, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That's where you'd go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. And whether you're listening live or whether you're listening to the podcast, please accept my thanks for being part of this extraordinary little community. Thank you so very much indeed for taking part in something that is rare, that is unique, and that is, frankly, a doggone good time. Yeah. So, that being the case, if you are listening to the live program, well, pop on over to HeadOn.live and join in the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in those 3 hours that we're live. You'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Anatole and Irish Dave and Squeaky. Hi, gang. And capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. I'm in there, too. Just don't interact a lot because I'm usually not on the chat room screen. I've got low in the Horn magnificent Kincaid Mansion and the fabulous Horn Studios. There are many open tabs. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you're listening to the podcast, please like and subscribe to it and tell your friends and help people discover what's going on here. It takes a little time, a little effort, and can make a tremendous difference. Pretty please. And the algorithms just love it when you leave a comment. Or at least that's what Brother Deacon Asa tells me. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so consequently, thank you to our 12th day of the month subscribers. That's thank you to Paul, and thank you to Gary in New York, and thank you jumping in yesterday evening to TJ. But Gary and Paul are our subscribers for the 12th day of the month. We always need new subscribers. If we had more subscribers, there would be less pitching over the, a la carte portion of the program. But the bottom line is our fundraising goal stands at $1,250 to come up even with this, the 12th day of September. And here's the fun part of that $1,250. If a miracle happened and we got it all, it would all be gone by tomorrow. To various and sundry entities like West Virginia American Water and Appalachian Electric Power, where coal keeps the lights on, a little bit, unless it's thundering. We had a thunderstorm earlier, and I was like, oh, no. No, no, please don't. But it passed, and it's actually kind of pretty outside right now and warm. Won't be that way for much longer. And then I realized today when I was going to carry some stuff in from the car that I had forgotten kitty litter. My tags are out of date. And so is my sticker. 923. Wait, this is not. Oh dear. So, you know, the sheriff of Fayette County is going to get some money. He's the taxing authority here. And, of course, whatever it costs to get the new little sticker for the plate, and then, you know, 10 or 12 bucks for a new inspection sticker that the car doesn't need. You know, the whole inspection thing is just a racket. But that's where we are fundraising-wise. $1,250. And this would be a great time to not go deeper and deeper and deeper in the hole, because it would be awesome just to get the little bill monkey off my back. But that being said, it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And we have... This is one of those everybody else is talking about it, so I guess we will too, because it just seems weird to ignore something like this. So we won't. In a flurry. No, it's not even a flurry. It's more like a drizzle of Republican derpitude. Kevers McCarthy, the man with the spine of silly putty, came out of his spider hole today and made a statement to reporters in which he acceded to the demands of his hostage takers, you know, the Andy Biggses and the Ralph Normans at Al, and, of course, Marge, who, while she has been apparently kicked out of the feedum carcass, we really don't know, and it's kind of hard to care, but she's, I will not consider spending another damn dime here unless we impeach President Biden. How? Yeah, I wish I was kidding. I'm not. Yeah. So, Kevers McCarthy said today there were serious and credible allegations of wrongdoing by the Biden family. Kev, come here, buddy. Hey, no, come here. Do you remember Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy, Trump Kushner? You remember her? Because the Democrats in the House, who have a lot better lawyers than any people you have on your side, are going to hang her like the rotting corpse of an albatross around your neck. Yeah, Kev, you know it. And for that matter, you know, dumber and dumberer, too. And Nitwit Nero himself and all those emoluments that he keeps rubbing on his skin. It rubs the emolument on its skin, or else it... Never mind. These are allegations of abuse of power, obstruction, and corruption, and they warrant further investigation by the House of Representatives. That's why today I am directing our House committee to open a formal impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. Somebody stuck a microphone and a camera in John Fetterman's face in the Russell Senate office building. I recognized the setting immediately. And he said, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy just authorized a House impeachment inquiry, at which Fetterman, who is a... I mean, the ceilings in the basement of the Russell Senate office building are small. It's the one place on Earth where Miss Lindsey Graham can look tall. I passed him in that hallway, and I think I am every bit of 2 feet taller than him. Something like that. Hey, how's the weather down there, Miss Lindsay? And John Fetterman, it makes me feel dainty and petite, okay? And so, you know, he was wearing his trademark shorts and oversized shirt, and the very, very serious young reporter said, as I noted, Speaker McCarthy has authorized an impeachment inquiry into President Biden. And Fetterman slapped his hands to his face, Kevin style, you know, from Home Alone, and went, "No!" And then let go with the biggest old belly laugh you ever heard. And turned and kept walking. Because everybody knows that this line in Kevers McCarthy's statement, "Today I'm directing our House committee to open a formal impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden because the Feedum carcass has my testicles in an old peanut butter jar in the back of Marjorie Trader Greene's refrigerator, and I'd like them back." And we can... I mean, it's ludicrous. And it's not even certain that Kevers even has the votes to approve a bill of impeachment on anything. I saw a meme today. You want to talk about wild? You remember little Maddie Cawthorn, who had the great taste in black lace bras, who got bounced out of the North Carolina delegation to the House of Representatives before his 14th Amendment trial could begin into whether or not he participated in an insurrection against the Constitution of the United States. Sorry, you lose, honey. He posted a meme. It was a picture of the Twin Towers smoking. I don't mean like Morticia Adams, "Do you mind if I smoke?" or the Twin Towers is something from Aqua Teen Hunger Force with a cigarette. You know, like maybe. Never mind. On fire. "In memory of the number of people killed, Americans killed," and said, "but also in memory of the million or so innocent Iraqis and Afghanis who were murdered thereafter." And I was like, well, I'll be damned. But it was Maddie Cawthorn, of course, and he's decided, because he's one of those people who thinks that history began the day he was born. Still want to know where he got that black bra. But the commentary under the meme, well, it was nothing if not precious. Somebody said, "How did the towers fall?" And the immediate response was, "Hunter Biden knocked him over with his dick." So I'm looking for that allegation in any upcoming report of an impeachment inquiry into the Biden crime family. Jesus. They're so stupid. And this is so just patently silly. They're only doing it for noogie value. "Got you back." See, that was halfway in. See, he got impeached too. Two more impeachments and he'll be more impeached than me. Get with it, boys and girls. So, but that's not the end of it all. Because Kevers didn't make his life any easier. Because what Kevers did was not apparently enough to suit the members of the Feedum carcass out there mouth-walking and knuckle-breathing and picking their teeth with their toenail clippings. Yeah, I got a popcorn haul back here. Here, let me thick toenail ought to work for that. That was probably a gross thing to be doing during the dinner hour in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone if you're listening live. Sorry. But, you know, there's some Orwellian weasel words, and we're going to have an impeachment inquiry. That's an inquiry as to whether there should be an impeachment. It's not an actual impeachment hearing. It's sort of like the dry humping of impeachment. It comes to nothing. It don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch. And it was definitely not enough to suit that one little potential 14th Amendment violating treasonous member of the House of Representatives, the man with the giant forehead who left his notifications on Venmo and then transferred money to an underage girl in exchange for sex. And so it was that Matt, it just gets worse, took to the floor of the House, where he served notice that he was not happy with his own speaker. Mr. Speaker, I may just grab that old peanut butter jar out of the fridge that has your testicles in it and smash it all over the sidewalk.
The chair now recognizes the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Gates, for 5 minutes.
On this very floor in January, the whole world witnessed a historic contest for House Speaker. I rise today to serve notice. Mr. Speaker, you are out of compliance with the agreement that allowed you to assume this role. The path forward for the House of Representatives is to either bring you into immediate total compliance or remove you pursuant to a motion to vacate the chair.
Well, now, you are not in compliance. We will remove you. Yeah.
We have had no vote on term limits or on balanced budgets as the agreement demanded and required. There's been no full release of the January 6th tapes, as you promised.
You know, they can vote on term limits until hell freezes over. But that's going to take some constitutional action. Like an amendment there, Mr. Forehead. I want symbolic votes! And by the way, Ralphs is putting forward a $25 challenge this evening for Cornfields, the boyfriend of Eden, the mama of some tiny kittens. He smashed into the recording camera. I didn't get the video, but it sounds adorable. Leave the babies alone, Cornfields. So if somebody's got $25 and likes kitties, that will get us down from $1,250 to $1,200, and we'll be maybe started toward keeping on the electricity and keeping me from getting pulled over by the local constabulary. Yay! Thank you, Ralphs. Oh, but Matt, he's got a mind like a steel trap, does the giant forehead. Imagine all that room for brains, and it's just instead, it's just a sloppy mess in there. The thin gray settlings just sloshing around. You can probably hear him when he moves his head. you know, with the occasional, I don't know, screaming eel from the Princess Bride or something.
There has been insufficient accountability for the Biden crime family, and instead of cutting spending to raise the debt limit, you relied on budgetary gimmicks.
I don't know if he's working out or what, but his body keeps getting smaller, and it makes his head like it's just, it looks like it's just getting bigger. He's beginning to look like one of those parade floats, and you know, those, you know, political satire parade floats in Europe, or perhaps South America.
And rescissions, so that you ultimately ended up serving as the valet to underwrite Biden's debt and advance his spending agenda. Mr. Speaker, you boasted in January.
We want the American people starved and desperate, damn it!
That we would use the power of the subpoena and the power of the purse. But here we are, 8 months later, and we haven't even sent the first subpoena to Hunter Biden. That's how you know.
Yeah, but didn't you get one at one point, Matt? Maybe I'm, or am I just thinking of Jim Jacketoff Jordan?
That the rushed and, you know, somewhat rattled performance you just saw from the speaker isn't real. At this point, during Democrat control over the House of Representatives, they had already brought in Don Jr. three times. And we haven't even sent the first subpoena to Hunter Biden. Power of the subpoena and power of the purse. Only thing the 118th Congress is known for at this point is electing Kevin McCarthy speaker and underwriting Biden's debt. And unfortunately, there's only one of those things we can remediate at this time. Power of the purse. Our leadership right now is asking us to vote for a continuing resolution. A vote for a continuing resolution is a vote to continue the Green New Deal, a vote to continue inflationary spending, and in the most troubling of fashions, a vote for a continuing resolution is a vote to continue the election interference of Jack Smith. Mr. Speaker, we told you how to use the power of the purse, individual, single subject spending bills that would allow us to have specific review, programmatic analysis, and it would allow us to zero out.
Yes, yes. Do you know how many programs are funded? Because you do. And I suspect maybe on days when he's sober, so does Matt Gaetz, how many programs there are that are funded by the federal government. And he wants an individual bill for each one of those. I mean, maybe that plays well with Embry and Marvelline there in their matching Barca loungers and their single wide at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Court. But if you want to have a conversation about, And they don't, but we do. You know, there are different kinds of economies out there. There is judicial economy, which is why in, say, Fulton County, Georgia, they are not going to have 17 separate trials, 17, on the same subject matter, because judicial economy demands that they did not do that because the time simply does not exist in which to accomplish it, and it's a monumental waste of time to prove the same thing 17 times. That's judicial economy. But there's also political economy. Because the very idea of economy is based upon the finitude of resources. Capitalist economy, demand economy, command economies. Scarcity. And in any given Congress, there is a scarcity of time in which to accomplish things, and there has to be a certain amount of triage involved. And so various funding bills get wrapped into one, but no. If you recall, Schoolhouse Rock, and I'm only a bill on Capitol Hill. You might recall that it had to do with there needs to be a stop sign on Elm Street. Well, under Matt Gaetz' plan, under the rules of the House for how bills progress, there would be one bill with that one stop sign on that one Elm Street. And they would have to consider that. Now, as the C-SPAN font notes, he represents Pensacola, Crestview, and Fort Walton Beach, Florida. And we know how problematic Florida is. But great googly moogly, are they all, or just nobody shows up to vote? I wonder, is Tommy the Tuber, the senior senator from Alabama, one of his constituents? Does Tommy the Tuber vote in Florida because that's where his residence is? I know, separate topic. Might be interesting to know. A senator that dumb would be more than adequately represented by a member of the House as dumb as Matt Gaetz. But the whole point of that, you know, bill-by-bill-by-bill approach is to, as he said, zero out a lot of shit. Trust me, they're not going to zero out anything for the oil industry. They're not going to zero out anything for the coal industry. They're not going to zero anything out for anything that continues to render this planet something less than habitable by humans in the not-at-all-distant future. But they will zero out hungry kids. And maybe they'll zero out the Department of Education. Hell, maybe they'll zero out the Department of Agriculture. Oh, boy, I tell you what, the farmers in his district, and I suppose there are some, are going to be real happy about that. But Kevers, well, Kevers is broken them. He's brokenated all of his promises. And Matt, it just gets worse, is so mad.
Green New Deal, a vote to continue inflationary spending, and in the most troubling of fashions, a vote for a continuing resolution is a vote to continue the election interference of Jack Smith. Mr. Speaker, we told you how to use the power of the purse, individual, single-subject spending bills that would allow us to have specific review, programmatic analysis, and that would allow us to zero out the salaries of the bureaucrats who have broken bad, targeted President Trump, or cut sweetheart deals for Hunter Biden. September 30th is rapidly approaching, and you have not put us in a position to succeed. There is no way to pass all the individual appropriations bills now. And it's not like we didn't know when September 30th was going to show up on the calendar. I must be better.
No, because he's worried about the debt limit.
And this House must be better, for it is the last best hope for tens of millions of Republicans. We demand real oversight.
Tens of millions of Republicans. He said the quiet part out loud. Everybody else can go get fucked.
Tens of millions of dollars flowing from foreign corrupt people into the bank accounts of the Biden family wasn't enough for
actual
impeachment.
Can I introduce you to the Trump crime family?
Why were we even looking? Joe Biden deserves impeachment for converting the vice presidency into an ATM machine for virtually his entire family. We all see it.
Wait, the vice presidency? We're going to impeach a sitting president for something that... Why aren't they curious?
We all know it. Now, moments ago...
He slings that word no around like it means something to him, like it's something he's capable of doing. I don't think it means what he thinks it means. Sorry, Inigo Montoya.
Speaker McCarthy endorsed an impeachment inquiry. This is a baby step following weeks of pressure from House conservatives to do more.
No, not from House conservatives. There aren't any House liberals in the Republican Party, dipshit. There's nothing but House conservatives. The people bringing the pressure campaign are the stump licker boys and a couple of girls who are drunk half out of their minds on that yellow jacket and wasp blade and shit. And dancing around the moonlight in that old peanut with that old peanut butter jar that has Kevra's balls in them. Be a real shame if somebody dropped this on a rock, Kev. But that's not. He's acting like there's a majority. There isn't.
Or, we must move faster. Now, I will concede that the votes I have called for will likely fail. Term limits, balanced budgets, maybe even impeachment. I am prepared for that eventuality, because at least if we take votes, the American people get to see who's fighting for them and who's willing to tolerate more corruption and business as usual. Mr. Speaker, dust off our written January agreement. You have a copy. Reflect on the spirit of that agreement and build on the...
Matt Gaetz calling for anybody to reflect on anything when the only thing reflecting around Matt Gaetz is his goddamn giant forehead. This is precious.
Start that we had moments ago began to comply. No continuing resolutions, individual spending bills or bust, votes on balanced budgets and term limits, subpoenas for Hunter Biden and the members of the Biden family who've been grifting off of this country, and the impeachment for Joe Biden.
It would mean nothing. I mean, it would be Shakespearean, full of sound and fury and signifying absolutely nothing. But I want to see Republicans in the House vote on term limits and age limits. Sure. How many terms would it be? Well, how many terms would it be until Matt Gaetz gets term limited out? Or how about the most senior members of the House maggots voting to slit their own throats? That would be kind of fun to behold, because they're not all young men with giant shiny foreheads like, you know, Matt. It just gets worse. Hell, Jim Jacket Off Jordan might be term limited out. Or Kevers his own self. How many terms is too many? Takes at least a couple to figure out the rules of how the place works. Just like it takes time to figure out you should probably make your Venmo account private so that the entire world can't see you transferring money to an underage girl for in exchange for sex. These things aren't just intuitive. They're not part of the autonomic function of the human brain, assuming one has one. As Flavio points out, every accusation is projection or confession or both. That's all on display here, Flavio, without a doubt.
That he so richly deserves. Do these things or face a motion to vacate the chair.
But the thing is, he can face motions to vacate the chair all day long and twice on Sunday, forehead. You don't have the votes. What, do you think the House of Representatives wants to turn the Speaker's gavel over to you? Good God in heaven, Hakeem Jeffries would eat you for a pre-luncheon snack. Kevers can barely stand up to the withering pressure. And this may play great for the mouth walkers and knuckle breathers back home in Pensacola, Crestview, and Fort Walton Beach, Florida. But for the normal people, or the ones that think they're normal, no. No. And you know who really doesn't love you, Matt? We'll get to that in a moment. You only play your reindeer games with the feed-em carcass, but Nancy Mace, who is a odious, is smarter than you. That Buck guy out in Colorado is infinitely smarter than you. Probably has less DUIs, too, while we're at it.
Let me alert the country. A motion to vacate might not pass at first, but it might before the 15th vote. And if Democrats bail out McCarthy, as they may do, then I will lead the resistance to this uniparty and the Biden...
Uniparty! Uniparty! Quit it! Oh, tell another one! Forehead? Uniparty. Because he's going to make the Democrats wear their support for Kevin McCarthy? I don't think that glove's going to fit. Matt? I really don't. This uniparty. What the Democrats will do is make you look like, just like they're going to make the Republicans look like absolute jackasses in their inquiry into whether to impeach President Biden. I mean, imagine it. Imagine, assuming this is not just done in House Judiciary, but it's done in some special committee. Imagine Jamie Raskin going up mano a mano with Jim Jacket Off Jordan, whom Fonnie Willis reminded us last week is not the member of any bar, except maybe, you know, Freddy's down at the corner, where they probably won't even honor his tab anymore. Imagine a constitutional scholar like Jamie Raskin going up toe-to-toe against a guy who got his law degree when he traced a picture of a turtle from the back of a matchbook, mailed it into the Columbia School of Journalism, not affiliated with CBS. That's what's coming. But these guys are so lost in their little echo chamber, they haven't a clue.
McCarthy Jeffries government that they are attempting to build. I know that Washington isn't a town where people are known for keeping their word. We'll speak.
Oh, Matt Gaetz calling someone a liar. Tell us another one. The Jeffries McCarthy government. Hakeem can destroy him while they're at it. Yeah, Matt Gaetz, I would just like to inform the gentleman from Fort Walton Beach. Home of the Hogshead Saloon, last I checked. I assume it's still there. It hasn't been blown away. I'd like to inform the gentleman from the Hogshead Saloon. Hog's Breath Saloon. I wouldn't pee on his Speaker of the House if his guts were on fire. But I do have a constitutional duty because of an oath I've sworn, and I actually take it seriously, unlike the representative from the Hog's Breath Saloon.
Speaker McCarthy, I'm here to hold you to yours. I yield back.
Oh, that was Butch, wasn't it? Oh, he's tough. Wah, wah, wah. Give that man a Perotti and a Serape. Deserving's got nothing to do with it. While the forehead is out there leading the resistance, you know, he's got some shoe polish on his face and a watch cap over his giant forehead, and you know, tiptoeing around like John Belushi and Animal House, putting his ladder up against the sorority girls' window. And yeah. You know, Matt Gaetz looks a little like John Belushi, and that's a damn shame. But the bottom line is, Kevers, because he has no character, because he has no spine, is in a bad place. According to Politico, interviews with more than two dozen GOP members, that would be 24 last I counted, and aides, and the next part of the line sounds like there was a magic eight ball involved with a cracked screen. This is answer hazy, ask again later. Reveal that it would take only a few rogue lawmakers, Rouge. Hi, Godzilla from Wasilla. Hell-bent on his downfall to risk McCarthy's fate in an entirely new way, sending their party spiraling into a new period of chaos. No, not more chaos. Not among those poor, poor, poor Republicans. Perish the thought. I think I feel a tear welling up from somewhere around down about my left index toe. Yeah, but those chaos Republicans, according to Politico, more centrist Republicans too. Show me one. Show me even one. Now, most centrist Republicans, too, are increasingly fed up with McCarthy's efforts to placate the far right. They want him to stop giving ground to lawmakers they see as holding the party hostage to unrealistic demands. That's a loose translation from maggot speak, because they're all maggots of one sort or another. But representing Don Bacon from Nebraska-stan isn't mincing any words.
There's at least 180 of us that will vote for the speaker 15 more times if we've got to, so we just can't be held hostage to a threat. We're talking about a small minority who want to control the conference.
And then the Politico article talks about the budget, possible government shutdown. Randy Radar asking a few minutes ago, if the pigs shut down the government, don't all the federal employees get time off, and then when the shutdown ends, don't they all get all of their back? Yeah, they do. And it costs the government a gajillion dollars, and it's a big kick. It's a big kick in the shorts to the American economy, and there are downstream effects that are documented. But that may be an indirect filibuster. Because remember, the House of Representatives at one point in time had a filibuster, too. Yeah, that was back in the 19th century, and the House of Representatives realized they were never going to get anything done if they kept that stinking filibuster. But the Senate, the Senate hung on to it. Never mind, different story. Dave Joyce is from Ohio, and he's another maggot. He's just not a feed'em carcass maggot. But being in Ohio, he worries about a government shutdown. Shutdown's not good for us if we want to show that given the opportunity of taking back the Senate and the presidency that we're going to lead. These Republicans couldn't come to an agreement on what to put on a pizza. With a big splashy headline, Politico's article, McCarthy pressure hits a boiling point. House Republicans are barreling toward an existential clash over this month's government funding talks. What did I mean by a constructive shutdown? Or a constructive filibuster? Well, if the House is tied up voting on a motion to vacate, they can't work on funding the government. Poor little Politico, they have to say things like ultra-conservative members of the House GOP. No. Absolute madcap members of the House GOP who are more dedicated to Donald Trump than they are to the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then Politico, trying to be charitable, says, McCarthy is a political survivor. Even his critics cannot deny that his skilled nature as an accommodator, his persistence in winning over even his most dogged critics, and his deep bench of allies have kept him alive in this highly fractured Republican Party. That's a lot of words for lickspittle, isn't it? Representing Bob Good, who don't like Kevers McCarthy, he went out to that little having a speechifying place out there outside the Capitol and said, the speaker faces two choices. He stares down the Senate, stares down the White House, forces them to cave, and is a transformational, historic speaker, or he can choose to make a deal with Democrats. In other words, he can shit all over the Constitution and do what we tell him to. Or he can actually honor his oath.
But if he makes a deal with Democrats, I don't think that's a sustainable thing for him as Speaker.
But he's got numbers problems, McCarthy does. According to Politico, there are at least four maggots who may be unavailable for voting, and that takes the number of votes down perilously. And one of those people who may not be available is his majority leader, his chief lieutenant, Steve Scalise of Louisiana Stan. Oh, darn. And those self-same moderates, including Nancy Mace, who said an impeachment inquiry is going absolutely nowhere. I mean, they're going to have to get people to actually throw themselves out of office. You know, Don Bacon, Buck in Colorado, in order to get a bill of impeachment on things for which no evidence exists. There is no there. Then there's the maggot Matt Rosendale of Montana Stan, cited by the Politico article, who said he don't cotton to McCarthy saying on national TV that a government shutdown would make it less likely for the GOP to be able to investigate the Biden family.
He's trying to intimidate us, partner. It's called a distraction, and guess what? I will not be intimidated by such distractions.
Matt Rosendale is feeling senatorial. And he went on to say,
if he strikes a deal and gets help from the Democrats, it'll be very costly to him. Yeah. It basically completely undermines his credibility.
Meanwhile, I almost have, and it's emanating from that same little cell in my left index toe where that little bit of, that one little tear made its way from. Almost sympathy for anybody who has to be the speaker for the speaker. And so the spokes creep, unnamed, said, "The speaker's view is that the more appropriations bills we can pass through the House through regular order, the stronger position we'll be in to achieve Republican goals of limiting spending and ending Pelosi priorities that are currently locked into law." Pelosi! Magic word there. "A short-term continuing resolution may be needed to do that and to keep Senate Dems from jamming taxpayers with an omnibus during the holidays. Because it's September. And they're already thinking about the holidays. When shit won't get done." Ken Buck may join in. Tim Burchett of Tennistan may join in with the other madcap maggots. Ken Buck said, "If McCarthy relies too much on Democrats, will he survive? Maybe, maybe not." And then a pro-McCarthy Republican, afraid to have his name or her name mentioned, said, "It would be a mistake to think it's all just the Freedom Caucus. And if he works with the Democrats on getting a spending bill, I know the speaker's concerned." But the question remains, and this goes back to that whole line about if you decided to shoot at the king, you'd best damned well make sure you hit. Who would they make Speaker of the House? Ken Buck? Matt Gaetz? Marge? Marge would love to be Speaker of the House. "I'm third in line to the presidency. Somebody shoot Kamala and Biden." That's a joke, Agent Fred. That's speculative in nature. And I'm speaking on behalf of Marginal Trailer Queen, and I don't think she'd deny it. Meanwhile, Jim Jacket Off Jordan, usually reliably insane, but not, you know, he doesn't go up and begin immediately gnawing on McCarthy's ankles. He's the closest thing that Kevers has to a friend among those members of Bedlam who have his testicles in a peanut butter jar. His main obsession is making life more miserable for brown people at the southern border of the United States. But representing Ralph Nauman, who we heard from recently, who is a member of the Freedom Caucus, the Freedom Caucus, says that, well, if he works half as hard on winning those people over, talking about the lunatics, those congressmen who did for the speakership, well, we can cut all kinds of shit. But Ralph Nauman then said, a government shutdown, we don't
That's pretty likely.
They don't, so all I can figure is that there is a, there's probably a Jeroboam of Mexican gasoline down in the speaker's lower desk drawer, and it's got about a 5 foot long swirly straw coming out of it. And he, and like I said, he's not just getting it from the weirdos who have his testicles in a peanut butter jar in the back of Marge's fridge. Bless her heart, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz called out Kevers for basically signing off on a giant fraud. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz has never been one to want for a biting quip. She showed up over on MSNBC.
They are afraid. They know they have nothing there, that there's been no evidence. And so they're using this word inquiry. He just said they're going to move forward on impeachment.
So explain to us, if you would, from the House.
In the
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Of Donald Trump.
What is the difference between an inquiry and impeachment?
There is no difference on it. They have to vote on whether to move forward on impeachment. That's what the vote is. That's what when we voted on impeachment of Donald Trump, who we impeached twice because there was real credible evidence that came up publicly and was evident and obvious, not this hazy gray area that they're hanging their hat on. They've acknowledged there's no evidence against Joe Biden. They are going to vote. The House has to
vote.
Can't
even find their
so-called
whistleblower.
On an impeachment period. They're adding the word inquiry like they're still going to do some investigations. They've been investigating for months and months. They've acknowledged they have no evidence. They don't need to vote to move forward on impeachment, other than Donald Trump has pressured them that they are a wholly owned subsidiary of his campaign and they are giving in to their extreme MAGA Republicans, because Kevin McCarthy knows that one member can move to remove him, and the only thing he cares about is holding on to power.
Ali Vitale, you were just right very close to where this, it wasn't a news conference, more or less like a statement. What's the reaction there?
Well, look, I think this is what we expected it to be. I think what's important, though, and as we're parsing through words of is it an impeachment, is it an impeachment inquiry, the words McCarthy used here are actually really important, because he said that he was directing his key chairman on oversight, ways and means, and judiciary to open an inquiry, not that he was going to be pushing for a vote on it. And I think that's a really important distinction here, because to open the inquiry, you got to do the vote, and they don't have the votes right now. And I think that that's what I overhear the congresswoman saying right now, is you have to vote to open the inquiry, but right now it doesn't seem like he's saying we're going to vote. He sounds like he's saying he wants the chairman to start the process of that, but it's an important distinction, because you can't move forward with it without actually voting on it. And again, I don't know if the speaker has the votes to even open the impeachment inquiry. So before we parse what impeachment and impeachment inquiries do, and there's a hair of a difference there, we need to figure out if they're actually even going to be voting to do this in the first place, because yes, it's an attempt by McCarthy to placate people like Matt Gaetz, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, like other people on the rightward flank of his party, but without an actual vote on that, it doesn't necessarily placate anyone, and this could leave McCarthy in the position where he's angering the right because he doesn't have the votes on this, and he's putting moderates in a bad place because they're going to have to defend doing an impeachment inquiry anyway.
So, Congresswoman, if you would, let's try to, again, we're parsing words and semantics matter, but words matter. What action or possible action has the speaker been talking about?
I have no idea. It is not an impeachment unless they bring it to the floor for a vote. Impeachment inquiry, impeachment, call it whatever you want. The House already has investigatory power. The committees controlled by Republicans have been investigating, found no evidence whatsoever. And if he's come out and is trying to say that they're just going to continue to investigate and call it an impeachment inquiry without a vote of the House, then they are going to have problems with Matt Gaetz and their MAGA extremists. He's not going to be able to get away with that. if they go and vote to proceed on an impeachment that they call an inquiry, it's voting to move forward on impeachment. And that is because Kevin McCarthy cares more about holding on to power than he does about doing the right thing. And MAGA extremists are wholly owned subsidiaries of the Trump campaign.
And so, Ali, the next question would be, what is next for the speaker, right? I mean, he can announce anything that he wants to, but then what's the process that has to be followed in order for any of this to actually, I don't know, take steps towards fruition?
Two, three.
Yeah, is it lip service and just rhetorical placating, or what's the actual process here?
Potter, mic up.
I think now the question is, what does this mean to his chairman, who have been tasked with opening an inquiry which can't be opened unless they vote to do the impeachment inquiry? And so I do sort of think it puts us in kind of a chicken and egg situation here, where they have to answer the question of, will they successfully do the pressure campaign within their own party to get the votes to move on an impeachment inquiry? Because as much as moderates are being quiet right now because they might be reluctant to speak about this, there are people like Congressman Ken Buck of Colorado who have said that they don't want to vote for this right now. And there is an active lobbying campaign right now to try to get this person to flip his opinion to do this kind of an inquiry. All of that work has to be done in order to actually make this happen. And so that's one of the pieces that McCarthy can come out here and say that, but they're not able to do it unless they vote. And so I think that's a really important distinction. I know it seems silly to parse words here, but just because you direct someone to open an inquiry doesn't mean that you've done the vote to actually open the inquiry.
It's all of this is literally what Gertrude Stein said about Oakland, California. My apologies to Oakland. There's no there there. That's why I made the Shakespeare reference. Full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
So, I mean, and Congressman, you have been there for, as you said, you know, more than 15 years. Is there any meat behind this?
I mean, look at what he's saying. And I heard Nancy Mace and others say that, you know, they need an impeachment inquiry to supposedly get access to the president's bank records. Well, they don't have the authority to do anything like that unless they vote. They have a vote in the House to move forward with an impeachment. They can't just call a committee investigation an impeachment inquiry. And then get expanded access. They have to have a vote.
What's funny, though, is, and you know, we had the lengthy clip from Matt Forehead. Apparently, there is an assumption on the part of Kevers that they are dumb enough to fall for this. I mean, government oversight, James Comer, Jim Jacketoff, Jordan, and Judiciary, they've been barking and grunting and hooting and screaming and shrieking and bleating about Biden whistleblowers, and they actually got the one of the Biden whistleblowers, one of the ones they could actually find, They got him on the record in a statement. He said, "Shit, I don't know anything about nothing." See, that proves it. They got to him. No, it proves that he doesn't know anything about the things that the spirochetes are shrieking about in betwixt your ears. This is a nothing wrapped in a zero, enfolded in a nihil. But here we are.
They know they probably don't have the votes, so he's trying to either play games with his MAGA extremists to hold on to a little more time, but I think he's going to run into a buzzsaw of MAGA extremism if he doesn't actually bring it to a vote. And he doesn't have they don't have any more authority than they normally have without that vote.
Joining us now is Jake Sherman, founder of Punchbowl News and an MSNBC political contributor. So
I think that has to be part of Kevers McCarthy's calculus at the end of the day. The Black Lives Matter and the Antifa are not going to do anything to him because they generally don't. although they are the great bete noir, the great bugaboo of the right wing. No. On the other hand, in a nation of something like 330 million people, there are 400 million guns. And I would be remiss if I didn't note that a lot of those guns are owned by people who think that Matt Gaetz and Marge are really, really smart. And that the smartest person in the world, the entire world, the whole world, is a petulant, adipose, jiggling, waddling sack of sin who can barely walk to his putts from his golf cart at Bedmonster or his tacky-ass golf motels in Florida. That is what Kevers McCarthy has to worry about. And he saw it in plain view, up close and personal, on January the 6th, 2021. That's why he got on the blower to the demented orange circus peanut and yelled, "Call off your fucking people." Not call off these fucking Republicans. Not call off these conservatives. Call off your fucking people. And he said it to Donald Trump. And everybody knows he said it to Donald Trump. And then Donald Trump smacked him around a little bit and made him come down to MAGA lardass and kiss the ring. The word, the noun ring, is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. Lee in New York says, inquiry. Yeah, hi, Robin. Hi, Lee. In Elmer Fudd voice. I am a wascally Republican. Be very quiet. I'm hunting the relative of a hunter. Yeah. My name is Donald J. Trump. Millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. Would that it were not such an apt comparison and so tragically unfunny now. So, I mean, we have that, all of that. Everything that's gone into the last hour and 8 minutes of the program. And over in the Senate, both maggots and decent human beings, Democrats, are saying that the House is wasting its time. Mainly because they are. At one point, some pixel-stained wretch actually asked a hard question of representing Scott Perry from the Old Dominion. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the Keystone State. As someone noted the other night, quite possibly the Keystone Cops State. Again, they had one of their press releases, and you know, that's where one of the maggots came out, and there was a lot of bleating and grunting and so forth going on, and well, Scott Perry didn't have the greatest afternoon.
I don't think it'd be appropriate. All right, last question. Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask, what actual evidence do you have as opposed to allegations to show to the American public that would merit an actual impeachment inquiry of Joe Biden and prove that today isn't just about some of you?
Oh, I don't know.
McCarthy.
I don't know.
Political revenge.
This isn't about political revenge. We have the bank accounts. We can see, ma'am, you can see that the homes that the Bidens own can't be afforded on a congressional or Senate salary. You also understand that it's not normal for family members to receive millions of dollars from overseas interests. Those things aren't normal. That's not normal to have 20 shell companies.
No, it's not. How many shell companies and how many overseas millions did Ivanka get? Oh, she's going to love her daddy so much more. When this is all over. Because her Tony friends that she used to go to brunch with and have mimosas and the like while the help took care of her children. I think she's going to be radioactive there in Manhattan some more. Maybe she can move to Saudi Arabia. They got a lot of Saudi money, her and hubby. She'd look great in a beekeeper suit. Daddy!
These things are not normal, and it alludes to not only just widespread corruption, but money laundering, if not influence peddling itself. And we also have the president, or the vice president at the time, on record saying that the prosecutor was fired. Well, son of a bitch, the prosecutor was fired, right? Because the prosecutor was going after the company that his son was working on.
No, the prosecutor was fired at the direction of a coalition who recognized that the prosecutor, he's talking about in Ukraine, was in the pocket of Mother Russia and crooked as a dog's hind leg. And that is not, that's not even a debatable issue. But suddenly he's Clarence fucking Darrow, right?
That's what we have. If you can't see that, if you are that blunt, look, I'll turn it over to the attorneys.
Yeah, he turned it over to the attorneys. What? A pasty-faced, doughy old white man coming up to mansplain to the little woman with the limey accent. And of all the humiliating references to Kevers McCarthy, well, I think the most profound one came from, of course, Rick Wilson, who swanned around with this lot for a while because, of course, he is an ex-GOP strategist. Was it he or Steve Schmidt that helped select Caribou Barbie for John McCain? I'm not sure, but nonetheless, Rick Wilson said McCarthy clings to the office, the portrait and the title, as the degenerates, maniacs, arsonists, and dead-enders burn his legacy to ashes. And then it gets so much worse. Here goes dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. He's Marge Splayfoot Green's gimp, ball-gagged and subservient, whimpering and debased, terrified of her wrath and yet tumescent from her cruelty. Virtually the entirety of the GOP elite, from Trump on down, is engaged in a blatant corrupt conspiracy right now to try to drive up Joe Biden's approval rating as they head into an election year. And another former Republican, David Jolly, said Kevin McCarthy may be securing Joe Biden's re-election this morning. Whereas Denver Riggleman, formerly a member of Congress from Virginia, said, my former Republican colleagues in the House are planning to move forward with an impeachment inquiry despite zero evidence against the president. This is a conspiracy theory in plain sight. As a former GOP member of Congress, I'll be the first to say that this should end. And then way, way, way down in the fever swamps of Red State, or wherever he is these days, Eric Erickson said, just me, but it seems like Mayorkas is a better target for impeachment, particularly given his insistence on the border being secure. And it exploits an issue that is less likely to cause Democrats to circle the wagons without political fallout. And that's where we are in 2023. An absolute neo-maxi Zoom dweeby like Eric Erickson, who may not even live up to the standards of the stopped clock law, you know, even a stop clock is right twice a day. Eric Erickson, I don't think, can lay claim to that, but by God, the blind hog found an acorn. But oh my God. Somebody out there, somebody, is going to get hold of that Rick Wilson clip. Marge, Splayfoot, Greens. Rick, you already used dead enders. I use that a lot. She's not Splayfoot, Rick. She's Sporkfoot. He's Marge, Splayfoot, Greens, Gimp. Maybe they borrowed the suit from Jerry Falwell Jr. I don't know. Ball gagged and subservient. Whimpering and debased. Terrified of her wrath and yet too messened from her cruelty. It's okay, Rick. You can go ahead and use the testicles in the old peanut butter jar reference if you want to. We give everything away for free here. By the way, there is a $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. It would be awfully helpful if we could get down to just $1,200. Awfully helpful indeed. Meanwhile, Rolling Stone reporter Aswin Subasang said, virtually the entirety of the GOP elite from Trump on down is engaged in a blatant corrupt conspiracy right now to drive up Joe Biden's approval rating as they head into an election year. I wanted to correct the reference on that. That was Aswin Subasang, not Rick Wilson. Rick Wilson's quote ended with, too messened from her cruelty. Whew. And there's more Titanic Tuesday magic. And if we have time for it, we might even get to some on this side. By the way, Stephen New York said, God, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Headline from The Guardian, Trump White House officials feel as if they are facing prison, ally Navarro says. Hey, Trump White House officials, I'm just here to say your feelings are valid. Yeah. Let's run over to the stress line, see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robin. It's Paul from Parts Unknown.
Oh, my God, Paul. How in the world are you?
Exhausted and busy, still pulling long hours. 12-hour shift yesterday, ended up getting home around 11.
Good Lord.
And started at 8:30.
is this a new thing? I mean, have things ramped back up because of the spread of the virus, or is this just how life has been?
This is a certain work order that comes across every three. There's long nights. But yes, things have ramped up a little bit for products and whatnot. So we're seeing an increase in demand and everyone's working overtime. So it's just super busy and I haven't had much time to call in. I didn't think it would, but apparently it takes more of your time to parent a teenager than toddler. I thought I was sort of on easy street, but no.
I wish you'd asked beforehand. I could have told you.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, they can talk and make microwave pizzas for, and they don't want to talk to me and just hide in their room. This is easy. No. So that's fun. But I'm calling in to say that I'm so far behind in the program. Just to give you an idea, I listened to the show yesterday that talked about Scott from San Diego passing.
My
condolences, but far behind I am. So I don't know any of the COVID talk that's been on the show. So if any, I ended up with it. It's time. I've been wanting to try to call or contact earlier in the past couple of weeks. I just haven't had the time or the timing. I've been wearing a mask at work for the past 2 weeks by my choice. The numbers are going up. My stepdaughter's bio dad caught COVID again for the second time. Claire still has never had COVID, never tested positive. We were able to keep her quarantined, so maybe it didn't blow back on us. I've gotten a couple other coworkers at the lab that the past couple of days because they've had close contact with people who have tested positive for COVID, and that's so it's creeping back in. And I was already concerned, and now I'm just starting to see it much closer than I'm comfortable with. And we haven't even hit, at least out here in parts unknown, it's still fairly 70, so we haven't even hit the cold inside yet, and it's creeping back.
Well, what does it tell you that it, you know? I mean, it's not. It's not exactly frigid in either Kentucky or Texas right now either. And they're canceling classes and closing schools and, God forbid, canceling football games because everybody's out sick with it.
Because it's – we relaxed. And this is luckily we have things going for us. As I talked about last time, I think the variants that are coming out all have a gene, and it is hypothesized that this gene can help get around the vaccine protection really well. And I talked about during the pandemic the danger of doing a partial vaccination and just letting too many people get vaccinated. You really can't. You really have to vaccinate 95% or higher to really lock stuff down. So you create an environment where there's plenty of non-vaccinated people that the virus can use for fuel and stay alive.
And buy lottery tickets.
In society. Yeah. And buy lottery tickets for the mutation that gets them around the virus. Get them exposed to people who have the vaccination, not around the virus, the vaccine. You let lots of people have the vaccine do it over and over and over again with the fuel to keep feeding it, and it will eventually get around the problem. And that's what it's doing. So in deer, like white-tailed deer in the East Coast, I mean, it's hiding in other animals. This is a very bug that we are not treating. I mean, my stance has always been we are not treating it like a threat it is, and it's going to bite us in the butt. And I'm really concerned about the future. Not that it's going to be apocalyptic, but...
We know, do we not, Paul, that, you know, it has moved from pandemic to endemic. And that's significant.
That's by choice.
Right. We chose that.
That's because of choices we made. I try to... Anyone I talk to, that we're here by choice. This was not inevitable. No one screwed up. They chose profits over people, and this is.
Well, I would be interested. I would be interested in hearing your take, and I think I know what it's going to be. But your take on the and I don't know if you've read this or not, but the Surgeon General of Florida. You know, a hand-picked minion.
I've not read that.
Well, he's a handpicked minion of Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis. And he recently came out and said, here in Florida, we're gonna preserve the right of Americans and Floridians to have choice. And people need to know everything about the vaccine before they ever take it. There's a lot of unknowns here.
Not good. I don't listen to that stuff for my mental health. It's fairly disillusioned to me, Robin, our response to it. Warning I want to give out and the advice I want to give out to take precautions to keep yourself safe. I recommend that everyone start masking up if they can. I understand that there are some people in professions that interact, like if you're in sales, all your customers don't could affect your job and your sales and your income. So I understand that there are sacrifices that people need to make. You can wear a mask. I'd recommend wearing a mask indoors. That's not your house and in places with five or more people, grocery stores and everything else. The FDA approved the new vaccine. The protection against this gene that some of these variants have that they get around previous vaccines. So the vaccines are updated just this week. So I would target getting a vaccine booster and getting all up to date before Halloween. That's a good deadline. I'd start making appointments now. My prediction is they're going to be easy to get in the beginning, but once the numbers rise and people panic, it'll be like toilet paper in a pandemic. You're going to have a hard time, possibly. So get boosted, get masked, and stay vigilant. Don't let the something that's bothering me at my work, and it's probably popping up around the country, is people are tired. People don't want to put the mask on again, and these are educated people that know better. They're just tired. They don't want to do it. They're vaccinated, so it's not going to be that bad. And they're right. It's not going to be that bad if you were not vaccinated in the beginning. But this is about snuffing out the fire. This is about stopping it, and then we all don't have to worry about it. So just protect yourself. And also, a lot of people who are vaccinated, it's on the past tense, were. Your protection lasts for roughly 6 months. I got vaccinated a year ago. That's the last shot I got was in September. So it's I'm wearing a mask more diligently until I get my booster, and being more careful because until I get my booster, I'm more vulnerable than before. And everyone else is too. If you can't remember the last time you got your vaccine booster, it's probably been too long and you're no longer protected. So please protect yourselves and stay healthy. And hopefully if you wear the mask and you get the booster and you're all set and ready to go by October 15th or so, you'll be ahead of the curve and protected when the news goes, wear a mask. You're already there and already. I'd recommend purchasing masks. My wife just bought like four packs of them, because she's feared that if it turns back on, there'll be a shortage. So we've got plenty of masks for our family to get through the winter. So the precautions and everything that we're taking.
With regard to masks, Paul, does the previous guidance still apply, namely nothing less than a KN95?
KN95 is the best, but you can still use the Atma 3, which is the blue on the outside, white on the inside, little papery surgeon mask that you see people wear a lot. Those are the minimal protection. But KN95 is the best you can get, that best you can do feasibly. The most protection would be in like an astronaut spacesuit for the entire day, but the gloves alone cost $50,000.
Ouch. Well, when it comes to masking, let me ask you this. You know, you say people are tired, and I get that. But how do you differentiate between mask fatigue and the fact that none of us were wearing masks when this thing first started?
I don't know.
Maybe I expressed that inartfully. Do you think? I mean, we're talking about smart people. We're not talking about the maggots here. Okay, we're talking about people who are smart enough to know to wear a mask. I think it would probably be different, say, where you are, or maybe Vermont, or Minnesota, or Michigan, places that are at least blue on the map, from say here, or Alabama. Do you think the potential negative blowback from, for lack of a better term, idiots, is part of that mask fatigue?
I think that I don't know. I think people are mostly just tired. It's a lot of them. I think personally, it's probably a little bit of denial. Like, if I don't put the mask on, if I put the mask back on, then the disease isn't back. And thirdly, unfortunately, kind of what I was saying earlier is that the pandemic kind of broke me. It disillusioned me. There's so much political ideology tied up in wearing a mask, tied up in perpetuating. Is which side are you on? And that baffles me. I understand the situation, and I understand there's not a good way out of this box. I understand that the president of the United States can't get pandemic's coming back. I need every American citizen to wear a mask to protect us and our children. And if you don't, it's going to blow out of control. And the blame's on you, not me. You are free to be stupid and die. Like, that's not a message the president can send. I understand that. But I can't find a way to disentangle the politics from the science. I'm kind of past the point of caring. Just wear the mask. I don't understand how we went from in post 9/11 world, where you had your color coded system and your Secretary of Security talking about what color the security condition is and what steps you take at what condition, how you can do that, which is a perfectly usable system on not a good subject, but they're directing citizens to keep safe and healthy, and you can't transcribe that to an actual real threat where you just have a race system. We're in the yellow. Everyone put the masks on. We're in the red. Everyone don't go to ball games. Stay out of crowds. No crowds is higher than 10. But that never happened. And I'm just mystified, and I'm a little scared. Not there's a massive apocalypse coming because of COVID, but I'm afraid that because the division and the ideology and all this other stuff, not enough people are going to wear masks, not enough people are going to be vaccinated, you're going to be in the middle of a COVID panic during the presidential election next year, and it's going to hurt Biden. But the reason it hurts Biden is because the very people not voting for him are spreading disease. And
you think that's greater? Is there any way of measuring or speculating in our case to whom the threat is greater, the people who will vote maggot versus the people who will vote Biden?
No, there is no way. Nature doesn't work on what your political ideology is. It's more about what your genetic is and genetic lottery. Obviously, if you're not protecting yourself, and it seems that people on the Republican side protect themselves less, then that has a higher degree of causing people health problems and death. But other than how much you protect yourself, which is probably the best barometer about whether or not you're going to get COVID, that's about it.
Well, let me ask you as sort of a follow-up, Paul. Let me ask you this, namely, I'm sure to some degree you must be familiar. I mean, it's not good for anybody's mental health, kind of like talking about the Surgeon General of Florida. But what does the presence of an anti-vaxxer like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., supposedly contesting President Biden in the primary, does that have any impact? Do you have any fears that there are actual people out there who should know better who will listen to that anti-vax jackass?
I don't think there's a significant portion of the population sitting on the fence on this one. I think everyone's in their camps. It's been 4 years. I don't think someone's going to suddenly change their mind. I don't think you're going to get someone who was heavily protected and masking up like crazy, like I was during the height of the pandemic, to go, oh, I don't need all this stuff. I'll be fine. And vaccines. And you're not going to get someone who never got vaccinated, survived COVID, never got it, or if they got it, they got a very mild case, wore a mask and had no problem, to go, oh, I should protect myself. I think everyone's just in their position.
And that's frightening, isn't it?
Operating. What's frightening to me is that, and I'm opinion on this, Robin. What's frightening to me is I hypothesize that the coming government shutdown drama, Biden's impeachment hearing, and every month the economy is going to crash any day now, but our job numbers are still record-breaking and our unemployment is still low, that the party seems to have no ideas, so they have to create a scandal or a disaster to wound Biden enough to win next year. And since they have been attacking the economy and they've been attacking his son and everything else, I don't think there's nothing stopping them morality-wise from on purpose people to take less than safe precautions and spread the disease so the pandemic's at full bore in March of next year and you can just attack Biden and try to win. And what mystifies me is that you can't, the Democratic side's not aggressive to call them out, which, you know, the pattern with the Republican Party is to cause problems when they're not in power so that they can get in power and not fix the problems they caused. I don't understand I don't want to say timidness, you know, the caution that's going on. No one can go, former President Trump's running, he's got 91 indictments. You know, how do you think a viable candidate? It's just he's vulnerable. There's no one calling him out on it. It's all a witch hunt and everything else. That's kind of my biggest concern.
And I think it's a viable concern. I mean, it's frightening to me the way you describe it.
This is an unpopular opinion that I have. It is a heated topic between my wife and I. It has just been my experience, and people's experiences are different, okay? But when I have encountered bullies in my life, I tried everything my parents taught me. Ignore them, continue to be nice to them, try to empathize, just going down the line, you know, empathize with them, talk to a teacher, talk to a principal. Nothing really happened. Nothing really stopped. Until I got aggressive. When I got aggressive and fought back half as hard as they were fighting me, they got scared real quick and the problem stopped. Now, I'm not happy about what I did. I'm not proud of using violence. I'm not proud of using threat. but I got the result I wanted, and I tried a lot of other things first. I apply that thinking to Trump and the mega Republicans. Tried empathy. We've tried ignoring. We've tried communicating. They keep attacking. And you've got to show force. And I don't want to show force if it's not necessary. If I'm missing another idea that you can use before violence, I'm happy to hear it. And perhaps you can pass it on to the Democratic Party. And I'm not calling for violence. I'm just calling for hitting them back hard, verbally, rhetorically, that type of thing. I'm just never seeing it. I'm never seeing a politician go, why are we even talking to this party with no platform, no ideas, just outrage, complaints, and no plan for the future? Why can't they be held to account to the standard we are? So I know it's an unpopular opinion, and I don't really want to have it. It's just been my personal history that's worked. And whenever Donald Trump talks, he is, for me, psychologically, the embodiment of every bully I had from school, because I grew up in a area and my family was middle class. So we were poor, quote unquote. So I was a poor kid at a rich school. So I had plenty of money, especially in high school, for 3 years, all the time. Bully things like steal my bike, knock over my lunch tray so I had nothing to eat after I got it. All that crap. And what stopped it was back. Is there any other option?
I mean, I understand everything that you're saying, and I generally espouse nonviolence, but everything you just described are things that I went through at one point in time. Yeah, I know what bullying feels like. I know how humiliating it is and how terrifying it is and how it impacts your ability to get from day to day. And I mean, from my own history, I remember the day that this is going to sound crazy, but, you know, they go and they live in your little synapses in your brain. It was warm weather. It was junior high school. We had just gotten done with lunch. Milk was in little cardboard cartons, and this one little asshole had gone to the trouble of very carefully folding his empty milk carton so that it formed a rather effective projectile. And as I was walking away, he screamed that F word, and not the three-letter version, the, you know, six-letter version, and threw it and hit me in the small of my back with it. And it stung. I mean, it stung like a bee sting.
Yeah.
It hurt. And I remember turning around and walking back over to him and not saying a word and just cold-cocking him with my fist right to his head and dropped him and turned around and walked away. And he never bothered me again.
Yeah.
I bet I know how he votes to this day. But that having been said, the impulse to think that maybe that is remedial. I mean, and you know, we could. I know you don't have time. You're on break and everything. But January 6th, I find myself wishing that the Capitol Police had weapons equal to the task of the weapons that the maggots, the domestic terrorists, brought with them, and had been cleared to open fire. I mean, how do you undergo a violent siege and attack and not fight back?
Yeah, I understand that too. And again, not popular, and it's also Sean Connery, but from the Untouchables in the 80s, he pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He puts one of yours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the morgue. That's how things can get done sometimes. I don't want to go there, but
you make a cogent argument, though, because every time I see one of these, Enrique Tarrio, the Proud Boy, got 18 years in prison. The prosecution justly and according to law wanted 33. But there was a maggot judge on the bench. So the difference between him getting out at 58 versus him getting out at 73 is significant. He can still be a risk at 58.
I understand that. My regardless of the sentence is the, and I don't know if it's actual policy that is bouncing around MAGA land or just a that is scaring the other side. But what I've heard from MSNBC is that Donald Trump's elected president again and gets in there, one of his party promises will be to pardon every January 6th person. So it doesn't matter if he gets 18 or 33 years, he could be free.
there's the question of if he gets in, will he pardon himself?
Well, yes. It's just a matter of whether or not the Supreme Court will say that or not. I'm assuming he'll try because he's never not tried.
No, you're absolutely right. I think your fears are well founded. I think your concerns are well founded, and they're largely shared by the Horn Family Community Congregation, without a doubt. I'm glad you're in a place where at least nominally. You're not as likely to see some of this, perhaps, as those of us who live behind the corn pone curtain, or God knows, Florida.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Robin. And it was a nice conversation. My break is over. Just a final thing: please mask up. Please err on the side of caution. You find yourself psychologically in a gray area of I don't know whether I should be careful or not. Be careful. Just lean into the careful, lean into the masks, and protect yourself. Because a lot is going to happen in the next few months. This could be the peak of this particular strain, and it might die off November, December, and not do a lot of damage because it doesn't infect a lot of people because it's not super cold yet, and not everyone's inside breathing the same air away from the sun. But it just seems like it's going to hit in some factor moderate to bigger, and I just want people to stay safe and healthy. And I'm just sending up a flare. Protect yourself. If you don't know me, I'm Paul from Parts Unknown. I have a master's in chemistry and a bachelor's in biochemistry. I was looking to do the master's program in public health, but went a different direction. I've studied virology and immunology. I'm an expert on drugs and interactions with the body and diseases with the body. So as an expert, I'm telling the Horn family, if you're a new listener and whatnot, that's the authority I stand on. Mask up, protect yourselves.
I am going to go tomorrow and buy as many boxes of new masks as I can afford. I already bought one, right. But that's not enough to last. You take care of yourself, Paul, and our best to your entire family. Thank you so much for such cogent information and in such timely fashion.
Thanks, Robin, and thank you, Horn family. Stay safe out there. Bye.
Bye. It always blows me away when we get a call from Paul from Parts Unknown, because he does bring expertise that most of us don't have. And I don't know if hospitals will be overwhelmed as it grows colder, but this is still not something to gamble about. You know, Paul talked about how they had managed to, and I don't know how we have, but we've been as careful as we possibly could. And so far, you know, I'm so glad to have a solid wood table next to me when I need to engage in my superstition. And I got to figure out a way to get the new booster because, of course, it will probably be cash on the barrel head now. And I don't know how far to push it out because I guess you get, 4 to 6 months worth of protection? So I need to count backward from cold weather, I think. 6 months from March is 3, and so December, no. Yeah, Paul's right. Be ready by Halloween. And if you're masking and you're planning for your booster on or before the 15th of October, you should be in pretty good shape. But with the, Flavio wrote in and said, I'm getting my booster ASAP. And sent me an article from CBS News. I think it's a good idea, Flavio. And because at this point in time, I mean, you're not in a blue state, but it's not blood red. But you've probably got enough dumb people around you to make your decision to get it ASAP wise. And I'm wondering if that's the case here. At least Annette will be able to get hers. So, fingers crossed. That having been said, we are almost to the third hour of the program. Jude, by the way, says, remember, I hear what Paul is experiencing in having to stand, as there is a season for everything. There is. And I'm hoping that this coming COVID season will not be extra brutal. But again, I think maybe one of the most significant points that Paul made in the course of our conversation is we are here by choice. Period. If the American people had gone about this with, and Paul used 9/11, the same diligence we did that, well, you know, we're orange today, y'all. Make sure you put your cellophane over the windows. Funny, Republicans were willing to put cellophane over their windows, but they're not willing to put a little piece of cloth. Right. Randy Radar said, so when you sneeze or cough, you shoot out droplets at up to 120 miles an hour, so your mask mainly protects other people, not so much yourself, correct? It does protect you, but the theory behind masking is if other people are protecting you and you're protecting other people, everybody gets protected. But the saddest thing out of all of this, and it's a sad commentary on where we are in the early part of the third decade of the 21st century. I guess 2023 is still the early part. Or is it the mid part? We're 4 years in. We're in the mid part. The mid part of the third decade of the 21st century. It shouldn't be an issue. We should be past this now. But we're not. For a variety of reasons that are subject to conversation, if you would like to call in, by the way. 844-843-4676, 844, the horn. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Oh, no, what did I just say? Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn. Some of that stuff, like I said, if an incident in eighth grade can get stuck on my synapses, imagine all those nights of saying that night. Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And that'll get you right into the conversation. But we are coming up on, like I said, the top of the third hour. We're goose egg, again, with significant bills breathing down our necks. And it just is what it is. And, oh, sometime Wednesday or thereafter, got to keep power on. It'd be nice not to get pulled over by the popo, because for someone like me, someplace like this, that's a frightening proposition, and shame on me for not knowing. You don't think about it. I didn't. Oh, shit, 9 September. Oh, okay. So I got to deal with that. Got to deal with everything. Fingers crossed. Fundraising goals at $1,250, $1,250. We can drop that to $1,200 if someone would like to match Ralph's $25 challenge. That would be extremely helpful. And we're moving into the middle of the month, and there's a vast and largely unsubscribed space in the middle of our month where PayPal subscribers are concerned. So what I'm going to do, thank you, Christopher. Christopher just jumped in, helping out as best I can. It is such good help. So thank you, Christopher. Thank you so very much. And that means There's $15 to go on Ralph's challenge, and that'll take us down to $12.50. Thank you, Christopher. I cannot thank you enough. Y'all are why this exists. You know, we're not monetized by YouTube, so that means that Alphabet Inc., by the way, who's getting their ass sued off for antitrust, look, we're using the Sherman Act, son of a gun, by the Department of Justice. One of the reasons we're not places like that is you can be demonetized in a minute for saying booger if someone brigades you. You know, a bunch of right-wingers, what have you. Bless her heart, Natalie Wynn, known as ContraPoints on YouTube, without a doubt one of the most brilliant YouTubers out there. She's been putting up what she calls tangents, because it takes her months and months and months to do a regular feature-length piece on YouTube. But for her Patreon subscribers, she puts up these things called tangents, and she revisited something that younger people will know about. I don't know about the about older folks. I'm older folks, and I know about it a bit, but I'm not in depth on it. She put up a piece on Gamergate from years past, and the rotten little incels and men's rights advocates brigaded her YouTube video, and without so much as kiss my butt to Natalie, YouTube pulled it down when there was nothing objectionable in it, save for the fact that a bunch of little incels covered in Cheeto dust typing with one hand in their parents' basement were butt hurt and offended by it. So there's that. So all that having been said, and again, thank you to Christopher for keeping us from being a goose egg, I'm going to take a quick break. And, well, it is, in fact, a Tuesday, so we have the Green News Report from Brad and Desi. And we'll see what those zany kids have to say. Okay?
It's Tuesday, September 12, 2023.
With a storm named Daniel and the relentless rains that authorities are describing as a biblical catastrophe.
First Greece, now Libya. Flooding causes widespread death and devastation.
The continent has enough potential to be entirely self-sufficient with the mixture of wind, solar, geothermal, sustainable biomass, and hydropower.
First ever African Climate Summit issues call for global carbon tax on fossil fuels. Plus,
I don't want it to happen when I'm winning up 6410. I wanted the momentum to keep going. But hey, if that's what they felt that they needed to do to get their voices heard, I can't really get upset at it.
Climate protests interrupt U.S. Open Tennis Championship.
All of those interruptions and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So is the government controlling the weather with laser beams?
Yes. Yes, they absolutely are, Jesse Waters. And you go tell everyone on Fox News about that right away. You get them. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, another grim weekend of extreme weather around the world, in Libya in particular. What do you got for us today?
Well, first up, we are keeping an eye on Hurricane Lee, which is churning in the record-hot Atlantic Ocean, where it could potentially impact the U.S. Northeast. When Lee hit Category 5 status late last week, it was a new record. For the first time, all seven tropical cyclone basins have produced a Category 5 storm in the same year, a measure of how human-caused climate change and El Nino have heated ocean waters to record levels.
Or a a measure of how dangerous those laser beams are.
The heat in the oceans is also turbocharging astonishing storms. Hong Kong, China was absolutely crippled late last week by the heaviest rain in 140 years of record keeping. 6 inches of rain in 1 hour turned streets into raging rivers and caused widespread infrastructure damage and destruction. In eastern Libya, officials say more than 10,000 people are missing or dead after torrential rains and floods from Mediterranean storm Daniel ripped through the city of Derna and swept away entire neighborhoods. The same storm in Greece inundated nearly 300 square miles of crops and is causing acute water shortages due to contaminated floodwaters. In other news, international climate diplomacy is shifting into high gear. At the first ever Africa Climate Summit late last week, heads of state unanimously adopted the Nairobi Declaration, which calls for a new global carbon tax on fossil fuel pollution, the phasing out of coal, and ending government subsidies for fossil fuels, plus reform of the global financial system to unlock large-scale investment in clean energy. They also called for more financing from wealthy countries that are historically responsible for man-made climate change to help developing countries adapt, because they are now bearing the brunt of climate impacts.
They are indeed. Look at Libya.
At the Group of 20 summit over the weekend, leaders agreed to triple renewable energy capacity globally by 2030 and to boost climate finance and adaptation funding for developing countries. But the G20 statement did not mention cutting emissions, and nations failed to agree to phase out fossil fuels that drive climate change, reportedly due to opposition from Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, and India.
What a surprise.
Meanwhile, a first-of-its-kind report by the United Nations finds some progress since the Paris Climate Agreement was reached in 2015, but the report warns the world is not on target to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Quote, the window of opportunity to secure a livable and sustainable future for all is rapidly closing. The report says governments must move faster to cut pollution and called for the phasing out of fossil fuels, phasing out of the internal combustion engine, and ending $450 billion in annual government subsidies for coal, oil, and natural gas.
Wouldn't need to do it if we just ended all the laser beams.
Finally, climate protesters interrupted the U.S. Open Tennis Championship for about an hour late last week, garnering criticism from some fans who questioned the effectiveness of lumping in potential allies with the fossil fuel industry and those responsible for delaying action. But in a press conference, new U.S. Open champion, 19-year-old Coco Gauff, whose semifinal match was interrupted, says she accepts climate science and sympathizes with their goals.
You know, I 100%, you know, believe in that. I think there's things that we can do better. The moments like this, yeah, are history-defining moments. And like I said, I prefer it not to happen in my match, but I wasn't pissed at, you know, the protesters. You know, I always speak about preaching about what you feel and what you believe in. And it was done in a peaceful way, so I can't get too mad at it.
Good for her. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ooh, sorry, I was chair dancing. Thanks, Brad and Desi. Of course, they're not listening, but I always appreciate the Green News Report. I do. And, well, I don't no shilly-shally. I got some thank yous to say, jumping in alongside Christopher to push back against the nothing. Sorry, we rewatched The Never-Ending Story recently. Dave in the Blind says, here you go. Hope this helps. Hi from Gladys and all the folks down at the shop, you know, Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Gladys. Hey, gang. Thanks a bunch. And thanks as well to David in South Carolina, Stan. Thank you so much. So that means that Ralph's challenge is met, which means that we have actually knocked it down from 1250 to 1165. That helps a lot. And anybody else wants to jump in, it would be wonderful. Thank you so much. Meanwhile, someone is on the stress line, and let's find out who. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's Randy Radar. How do you do?
Hey, Randy, how are you?
I'm pretty good after the last excitement of the past week. I guess I still may not have caught the guy yet. I have the convict there. Who escaped then.
He certainly changed his appearance.
Yeah, he got a lot of help somehow. Even stole a .22 supposedly, so from some garage that was unlocked. And got changed his shoes so he wouldn't leave footprints and so forth. But it's over in the current area, at least here. And I guess they're starting to decamp from their giant parking lot, giant grocery store parking lot. So I guess we can move around a little bit more easily. Yeah, I wanted to say that I'm not sure you got my email or discussed it, but like when you sneeze or cough, you expel droplets at 120 miles per hour.
Yeah, I did. I shared that.
Yeah, so yeah. So anyway, that's covered, but like I wanted to say on the democracy front that you don't really have a democracy nowadays unless you have ranked choice voting. And that's only available in Maine, and then only because of independent Senator King, for the most part, from that state. And the reason is, without ranked choice voting, one party only has to be marginally better than the other party in order to garner the votes.
Yeah, but by the same token,
You get one bad.
Yeah, you know, what happens? Yeah. What happens, Randy, if you've got ranked choice voting in Alabama?
You get the conservative party, not job or whatever.
Yeah, you get the same outcome. You get the same outcome you're going to get. Without it,
no. You get a farther right party than the Republicans. I guess it's something called the Conservative Party, but sort of like Utah. But the problem is that the Democrats have been in power in as someone pointed out, like for a long time. But the clog in the pipes is the Senate filibuster. Okay. Minority Senate filibuster, nothing gets through there for the most part. So I think a lot of the bills that Nancy Pelosi passed in the past when she was Speaker were almost facetious because she knew it wasn't going to get past the Senate filibuster.
Oh, that's just way too cynical. The House did its job.
Okay.
The House did its job.
I know they
did
their job.
They can't force the hand of the Senate. And frankly, because of the filibuster, it did, as I noted on a million occasions, most of those bills went and died a negligent death in a puddle of blood and dust on Mitch McConnell's desk.
That's correct. And they knew they were going to die, right?
But they nonetheless did their job.
Yeah, they did their job. Yeah, but the net result is like bumpkiss. Should I use the term? The Democrats when they were in power, like for the 60 days or 90 days or whatever way back, had everything in place and under the Obama administration with Al Franken there, finally seated and so forth. They could have done something about filibuster, couldn't they?
No, because the Senate rules were already in place.
Okay.
The Senate rules are voted on in January. By August of 2009, that's when, late August 2009, is when Al Franken was finally seated and they finally got their 60th vote. There was only one problem with that, however. Those 60 votes included people like, I referred to her as Joe Manchin in a worse wig. I'm talking about Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas. And Ben Nelson of Nebraska. And if you recall what happened at the same time, the Bush economy melted down at about the same time. And all of a sudden, everything that was planned to be done suddenly got put on hold because, you know, Blanche Lincoln was the senator from Walmart. And so the next thing you know, Ben Nelson and Blanche Lincoln are out there saying, well, you know, this would be a terrible time to give workers more rights because, you know, we're in the middle of an economic crisis. They were never going to be in favor of it anyway.
Right.
That, then, you know, rather than talk about the Senate, the cynicism of the House, which I don't think was there, what you have instead is the cynicism of the Senate. Because those,
know, what do we do about that?
Voters.
Okay.
I mean, look, there's a story out now, Randy, to the effect that Joe Manchin may retire from the Senate because, coincidentally, and I know this is a little bit of a deep dive, but my beloved alma mater, West Virginia University, is in a terrible fix right now. It has been mismanaged for years because of Republican ownership of the legislature since 2014, and they don't like to fund higher education. And so my university is in a financial mess, and it is now up on blocks in the president of the university, E. Gordon Gee's yard, and he's selling it out for parts on eBay, for lack of a better description. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out E. Gordon Gee's contract is up at the end of 2024, just like Joe Manchin's term. And there are rumors swirling that what Joe would really like to be now, because he's done been a member of the legislature and he's been the governor of West Virginia and he's been a senator from West Virginia, well, he can complete the quadfecta or whatever you call it, by being the president of WVU, which he will happily do, I will tell you, if the polling numbers look like he's going to get his ass handed to him by Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice and Baby Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Because he cannot stand that degree of humiliation. And it would mean nothing to Joe Manchin to just say, well, I've decided I'm not going to run him. I'm tired of the gridlock in the Senate, and I want to go somewhere where I can be useful, like my alma mater, WVU. And then he leaves the Democratic Party, which is a moribund shell of its former self, flapping in the breeze. We're guaranteed to have two Republican senators, and the immolation of this state is complete. And, you know, remember the first law of Manchin's. I'm the one who discovered it. No one named Manchin ever does anything that doesn't benefit someone named Manchin. The short form of that law of nature is Manchin's gonna Manchin. So, you know, if to go back to what I was saying originally, vote, okay? Vote. There are places where there's a chance of putting in senators who will do their damn job, i.e. Democrats. Don't expect that from West Virginia or Alabama or Mississippi. I know you do. I'm talking about broadly and generally. Don't sit and point at West Virginia and Alabama and say, well, why can't you people stop voting against your own best interests? I hate that. Because that presumes that people know what their best interests are or have best interests that align with whoever the people lecturing them are, and it ain't necessarily the truth.
Yeah.
So, you know, look to places, you know, there's going to be an open Senate seat in Michigan because Debbie Stabenow is stepping down. That has to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
John Tester has to be protected. He's a more likable version of Joe Manchin. He's not quite as awful and hateful. He's got to be protected in Montana. But when an opportunity arises to replace a Republican with a Democrat somewhere, those are the races that really, really, really matter.
I think I'd rather not give the political campaigns. I'd rather give the independent media, because Democrats are not forceful enough to support their own liberal media.
Well,
the way
that
billionaires and.
And a lot of people, you know, a lot of liberal media are funded through YouTube quite nicely. You know, if you can get up around a million viewers or something. But you know, to give to the DNC or the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee or the Democratic House Reelection Committee, whatever it's called. Those are probably dollars that are set fire to and just burnt to ashes. There are individual campaigns.
Right, yeah,
there are individual campaigns that are worthy of our attention. The woman that I highlighted last night, who has been sex crimed in Virginia over something that we don't even know when it happened, and even if it did happen, was entirely consensual. She was sex crimed, and she is a million times better candidate on the issues than her home building contractor 67-year-old opponent. She's worthy. Mm-hmm. If whoever is running against Marge in the 13th in Georgia is even halfway competent, he's at least worth a $10 bill. Or the guy who is already and has continued to challenge Lauren Bobblehead Boebert in Colorado. And I would say at this point in time, more House races than Senate races. Because if they impeach Joe Biden, as they want to, as was noted in the story that I had earlier, you know, that's Kevin McCarthy quite possibly locking up Joe Biden's reelection, which is fine by me. But then the next thing that needs to happen is Kevin McCarthy needs to not be speaker anymore. And we're talking about a difference of 5, 6, 7 seats. That's not a huge flip.
And the Democrats even managed to muck that up in New York.
Yeah, well, hopefully that lesson has been learned, Randy.
I'm not sure these lessons are learned, because if the lessons were learned, they learned that Fox News is responsible for the conservative surge. They don't learn that they have to put up money for independent media. Because it seems that the Democrats support somewhat the status quo, maybe slightly left. It's sort of like the race between Hillary and Trump, or Drump, as I like to call him, because that's his family name. But Hillary represented the top 10% of the population, the college degree professionals who could give to political campaigns. And Trump represented the top 1%, the ultra rich. And there's nobody to represent the other 90%.
But the thing is, Trump's Trump card was that he could make people who weren't particularly intelligent think that they were definitely his people. When he wouldn't even sit down to dinner in the same area code as them.
Right, yeah. But you see, the lack of support for independent media, the giving out of pencil erasers, pencils with names on them or whatever. Like, it seems like the Democrats are running some sort of extortion racket, especially when a third party candidate gets popular. And the Democratic Party descends on the third party candidate and says, you don't really want to run because, then a Republican will get elected, you know, because you'll be subtracting votes from us. And that's why the ranked choice voting thing seems so appealing. You can cast a vote for your third party candidate and swing and sort of pose a challenge to the mainstream Democrat. See what I mean?
Well, I do, but what happens though if you wind up with a nominee who doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell against whomever the Republicans nominate? Or are we presupposing in the nominating process that this is going to be a jungle primary like California?
No, ranked choice voting, you can waste your first choice on your candidate who's supposedly never going to win, okay? And then it goes to your second choice, which is the Democrat. See what I mean? And that way you swing, you put pressure on the Democrat to be more liberal. They have it in Maine, but they only have it in Maine because of independent Senator King, who normally wouldn't get elected if they didn't have ranked choice voting, I think. So you list your choices, 1, 2, 3, and if someone doesn't get 50%, then they take the bottom percentage ones and go to their second and third choices. It doesn't do anything except to give the third parties a chance to threaten to move the Democrats to the left. See what I mean?
Or, as we noted previously, the Republicans further to the right.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to imagine somebody worse than Tommy Tuberville in Alabama, but I guarantee you that person does exist.
They had that Utah constitutional candidate who was a Republican tanker guy, whatever, who was really far right, even further to the right than the Republican, so maybe he'd get in, but
even without ranked choice voting, you might remember that a few years ago, I guess it seems like he's been there forever now, but Republicans ousted a tenured senator with considerable power in favor of constitutional scholar Mike Lee, who is as useless as a screen door on a submarine.
Mm-hmm.
So it all gets fairly complex fairly quickly. But, you know, our side has enough of its own problems. I'm not going to run the clip or anything, but it is Titanic Tuesday. And I ran across a clip of a guy named Kyle Kalinske. I've heard about him over the years. I guess he's gotten really, really big. And he got into what I call the 2016 purity argument with Breonna Joy Gray. And she was arguing, she's an accelerationist now. We used to talk about accelerationism only in terms of Nazis. Like when they took out the power grid in Moore County, North Carolina. But I guess our side now has our own accelerationists who have adopted the Susan Sarandon approach of, you know, if we burn it all down now, it'll be ever so much better rising from the ashes. Which has never, ever, ever worked, but doesn't seem to dissuade people from making it. And so, Kyle Kalinske's in that general mix with people like Jimmy Dore, and a few others. And suddenly he was in the unenviable position of having to defend, listen, you've got to vote for Joe Biden, period. And Breonna Joy Gray was over there on the other side saying, burn, baby, burn.
Mm-hmm.
And asking Paul from Parts Unknown about, you know, is an anti-vaxxer like Rotted FK going to draw votes away from Biden? You know, he's too old. Oh, he got the vaccine. All that crap.
See, that's allowable under ranked choice voting, and the outcome is Joe Biden gets elected. Nobody drags votes away from anybody else who's non-viable candidate.
But do you honestly think that we will ever get to ranked choice voting on a federal level?
That's the problem because the Democrats seem to be pulling this sort of extortion. If you don't vote for our candidate, then the Republicans can't get in. You won't like that. You may not like that candidate that you're voting for. I would prefer to have a system where you vote for candidates. I mean, Maine has it. Maine accomplished it. Maybe we should all move to Maine.
I can't handle the cold here as it is. I'd have to live perpetually under a French fry lamp in Maine.
Included. I'm too old to handle that. I thought I'd mentioned the ranked choice voting and because it used to be called instant runoff voting, and it would have been easy with machines, but like now since nobody trusts the machines, a lot of people don't trust the machines. You can't implement it anymore easily. And I don't know if you have to do this with the ranked choice voting. I don't know if you have to do it at central polling place or not. But I mean, it involves percentages, low percentages being thrown to the second choice and third choice. So I'd like to know a little bit more about it, but.
I think it's experimentally interesting. I just don't necessarily know that it's going to have the profound effect that we think it's going to have. And again, everybody's in their silos. And so if you've got ranked choice voting, and the Republicans vote for the worse and the worse and the worse and the worse of the maggots. And maybe it's me and math. I don't see how it alters the landscape that much.
Yeah, well, if the Democrats would support the independent media also, like more than they did, because it was the Fox News that did everything in. So.
Well, but there are. I mean, you say the Democrats, elected Democratic politicians can't just like. Just as an example, send a check to the horn. What you need are foundations, people that do grants, right. That kind of thing. But then you start getting into the question of whether the media that you're talking about being independent is independent anymore. Because writing the check confers the presumed right to determine content.
So.
I mean, and if you say it about the multimillionaire for-profit media, they'll scream to the high heavens, no, that's not how it works. Our news division is entirely separate and apart from our advertising division. And that's as may be. But in the final analysis, if you've got let's take my filthy morning habit, for example. If Joe decides to go on a rant against Big Pharma, what do you suppose is going to happen to all of those ads with all of those disclaimers about all of those side effects that basically run right. during every break? They're not going to be there.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of that has happened to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Randy. But the thing is, Rupert doesn't care how much he loses because Rupert is so rich he never notices it. And as a consequence, he can use it as a vehicle for political change and political ideology and not care. But most, you know, most shareholder-driven outfits like Comcast or Paramount, they care. Because, frankly, in those instances, the so-called owners of the so-called liberal outlets are a hell of a lot better capitalists than, say, Rupert Murdoch. You know, the same goes. You know, They're not. They're if you're willing to kill brain cells and watch a little bit of Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda anytime on any day, they're really not advertising much of anything. It's all scams. It's all cons. It's all buy gold now and mattresses and scams to get people to buy hover rounds and things like that. But not a lot in the way of, hey, buy a Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you do still have more of the traditional advertising on outlets like MSNBC, NBC, CBS, etc. And all of all of this is because Rupert doesn't care. I mean, we've got that humongous judgment from Dominion against Fox.
What's the next lawsuit?
It's another voting outfit, and it may cost them as much or more. But it doesn't matter to Rupert because, among other things, the IRS code says that he gets to write all of that off. Or a big
half of it off.
Yeah, a big percentage of it off, yeah.
Yeah.
So it winds up being a net gain.
Yeah.
So, in the case of, and again, I'm using the horn just because, you know, we're in a hole. By the way, we did get down to 12:45, thanks to women's standing, 11:45. It depends on building a community and having people willing to have access to a program that doesn't have a corporate axe to grind, that isn't out there selling super beats, or, for that matter, spending, because this is the reality of it, every hour. I mean, if I do it like last night, if I do a three-hour Filibuster, minus the pregnant pauses you can put an aircraft carrier through, if I do a three-hour Filibuster, that's 3 hours of content. On the other hand, 3 hours in the for-profit media, whether it be radio or TV, is interrupted. And traditionally speaking, like with over-the-air radio, terrestrial radio, a three-hour program is actually 120 minutes, and fully 1 hour of that is advertising. So, as I've said for a very long time, the purpose of these programs is not the dissemination of information. It is to deliver potential consumers into the tender mercies of the corporations who fund it. And if the programming happens to be decent, that's just a stroke of dumb luck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You do a better job than, like most of the people out there. I did have one additional question, and that is, if the Senate rules are set at the beginning of the term, then how can they change them halfway through to say that it takes only half of the votes to elect a Supreme Court justice?
Because it's a specific single item issue. And in the case of Mitch McConnell, the rules don't mean much to him. When he blew up the 60 vote rule for Supreme Court justices, he did so blaming Harry Reid for having done so in years previous with regard to lower court justices, but not touching the Supreme Court. So he claimed he was merely being consistent. But he always has a made up excuse, like Merrick Garland.
Well, you know, we've never considered a Supreme Court justice who was nominated in a year that had a leap month in it, and in which the snowfall in February was less than 1.5 inches in Washington, D.C. We'd never done that before, and it was not contemplated by the framers of the Constitution.
Hmm. Well, I think we've covered everything I wanted to cover, so I'll let you get back to your program. But, like, I just was wondering how they could change the rules halfway through when all the stuff was at the beginning of the term. Something that major, see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. How
parliamentarian gets it, yeah.
Well, I think it's been a fantastic conversation, Randy. You don't call in a bunch, but when you do,
okay,
we have good content. You take care, and I'm glad the helicopters are no longer hovering overhead.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Bye. It's our buddy Randy Radar, who was apparently under siege in the Keystone Top manhunt in Pennsylvania. A little bit more background from Lee in New York on ranked choice voting. Maine and Alaska have it statewide. New York City has it. Works this way. If no one gets 50%, the lowest count person is eliminated. A ballot with no eligible name is eliminated. The rest are totaled up with the top choice name getting the vote. Go back to the top. It may get down to two names. Example, if used in the Republican primary, assume it gets down to the Florida candidates. A ballot filled out for Nikki, Wewake, and Asa will be dropped when all three are eliminated. And even that, I'm sure there are constitutional scholars. Oh, no, that's perfectly fine. But there's a constitutional principle, at least on a national level, that says one person, one vote. And if you're voting for multiple people on a first ballot, or on your ballot, that's more than one vote. However, it is one ballot. So, I mean, at some point in time, it becomes a matter of angels dancing on the head of a pin. On the other hand, however, people are continuing to manifest righteous outrage about what's going on in Talibama and the fact that the state of Alabama is simply thumbing its nose at the Supreme Court of the United States, whomst they love, at least ostensibly. But it was a 5-4 ruling in June in which Brett Kavanaugh and old Balls and Strikes sided with Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson and said that the map in Alabama discriminated against black voters. Now, naturally, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Fappy Thomas, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, both of them crooked as a dog's hind leg, Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, also crooked, and Amy Covid Barrett, apparently also crooked, the handmaid, but probably crooked at the direction of her, you know, husband to whom she submits in the name of Jesus. Well, they all dissented. And they told Alabama to create a second majority black district. And Alabama legislature said, well, hell no, we ain't going to do that. And so over at the Bulwark today, Kimberly Whaley, who is a law professor at the University of Baltimore, said, not only is the legislature of Alabama knowingly violating the Voting Rights Act to multiple federal court orders directing it to create two, not one, majority black voting districts, but in a new and troubling low for Republicans, the state's GOP lawmakers have also openly admitted and admittedly flouted a June 8, 2023 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court holding that two black districts, not one, are required by law. And she went on to say that the Alabama legislature, and she's not wrong, are behaving like belligerent toddlers by coming out with yet another plan that doesn't do what the Supreme Court said to damned well do. But understanding the reality of the situation, Professor Whaley went on and said, Alabama is correct to anticipate that this right-leaning court will issue more rollbacks of long-standing constitutional protections on the basis of race and other immutable characteristics. But the fact that Alabama is pushing that outcome while at the same time testing the legitimacy of the court's precedent is pretty scary. And that's a significant understatement. And the game that they're playing even if they lose, may wind up to their benefit insofar as their entire purpose is to make sure that that district, even if President Biden were to send in the National Guard to somehow enforce it, and I have no idea what that would look like, that district will not exist in November of 2024, thereby protecting one more seat in the razor-thin maggot House majority. Is there anything that might help in this? Yeah, there is. If the court were to say, listen, this is the map we said to draw. You didn't draw it. You have, yesterday, to put it into effect, and if you don't, you will be fined, let's pick an easy number to deal with, $1 million a day. And the people doing the primary refusing will be hailed before the court on a charge of criminal contempt. That would require the Supreme Court of the United States to have far more starch than it does if the statutory authority even exists for them to do that. And speaking of Alabama, because why not? Let's check in. I know, we can't talk about sports around here, but this isn't really a sports story. Saturday night, and yes, I watched it, the Alabama Crimson Tide, they're all I got. I mean, WVU is not going to shock the world this year. It would be morally repugnant if in the year that my university is being parted out, the football team to be turned out to be worth a damn. I know, it's so vacuous. But the University of Alabama hosted the University of Texas in Tuscaloosa. Home game, big deal, packed stands, and the University of Texas Longhorns proceeded to hand the Alabama Crimson Tide their asses at home in Bryant-Denny Stadium. As Texas players left the field, many of whom, probably a majority of whom, are black. Some, because we have to say some, members of the Crimson Tide faithful behaved with characteristic aplomb.
You're a fucking faggot! You guys are all faggots! Go back to the projects, faggots! Go back to the projects! Faggots! Go back to the projects!
Let's go! Yeah, because it's Alabama, so naturally, when yelling at a team that just handed you your ass, you want to haul out the old F slur. You know why they hauled out the F slur? Because the players they were screaming at were black, and I couldn't necessarily use the word they wanted to use because it might not sit well with the black players of the Crimson Tide. But of course, they would. So you use the F slur. Racist, according to AL.com. Racist, anti-gay, just generally offensive remarks at Texas fans and players. You heard, go back to the projects. I don't think anybody in Alabama needs to tell anybody anywhere else to go back to the projects. Lest someone turn around and say, hey, last night when I was doing your mom, when shaving her back, she told me to tell you to go home. Or something equally obnoxious. But I mention this ugly-ass story only to note that Alabama's politics are as ugly as they are, and as racist and homophobic and transphobic and xenophobic and misogynistic as they are, because that's who a majority of the people there are. And it breaks my heart to say it. But tell me it's not true. Miles Berry of the Shadow League said, "This is an unfortunate circumstance for Alabama, as a few rotten apples are looking to spoil the name of a historically successful and dominant football program that has produced plenty of players and people who are upstanding people and players." Mr. Berry? I don't necessarily know that that's an accurate statement. Those people send people to the legislature who actively want to prevent people of color from voting. And that's not a few bad apples. Do you really think if you engage the idiot that was howling there in that audio clip, you think if you engaged him on the Supreme Court's ruling in June of 2023, that he would sit down and give you a nuanced answer?
Saying, well, yeah, of course, it seems only rational, given the populational dynamics of the state of Alabama, to create a second majority black district. I mean, otherwise the black vote would be further diluted than it already is.
Oh, hell no! Not even a little bit. Please. Now, mercifully, let's leave the state of Alabama and go up over down under and check in on a founder and CEO of an outfit called the Gannett Group, who, according to the Australian Financial Review, has said that we're taking it too easy on the proles. I don't know what the Gerner Group is, but I'm betting that they don't... Well, whatever. Some toxic hedge fund, I'm sure. Oh, going back to Alabama, David in South Carolina, Stan. Thanks again, David. So it's the same here. White people here are as well. So sad. Every time I go to a grocery store and look around, I think about it. How do you not? Individuals can be decent. Mobs are a mess. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to give that guy in Tuscaloosa a break and say, well, you know, he probably had one too many Bud Lights. Horseshit. Alcohol doesn't change one's personality. Alcohol only shuts down the filter. And I don't care if it's a beer, a seltzer, a glass of wine, or a bottle of old panther piss. But anyway, back to Australia. Well, I know who Tim Ganey is, but I don't think I really want to. And he says that the working people, are definitely not him, is slacking. People decided they didn't really want to work so much anymore through COVID, and that's had a massive issue on productivity. They've been paid a lot to not do too much in the last few years, and we need to see that change. We need to see unemployment rise. Unemployment has to jump to, dig this number. And understand, there's nothing unique to Australia about this. This is a billionaire thing. We need to see unemployment rise. Unemployment has to jump 40 to 50% in my view. We need to see some pain in the economy. Well, I don't need pain myself, and I think I'm pretty well, pretty well insulated against it. But we need to see some pain in the economy. Jesus Christ, purchasing a home in Oz is all but impossible. I wish I could ring up my old buddy John Fox on the blower and just get him to give us a straight skinny. Even finding a place to rent, wait, it's just like here, is prohibitive. I was joking around with somebody online, and I talked about, you know, my ongoing fears about staying here. What I was talking with Randy Radar about a little bit ago plays into it. Once we've got two Republican senators here, and bear in mind that Pill Push and Patty Morrissey wants to be the governor of West Virginia, and there aren't enough Democrats in the West Virginia state legislature to riot and turn over a Volkswagen Beetle. Things could get very ugly here very quickly. And Aaron Reed, who knows these things, says that it can get really bad within the next 2 years, and probably within the next year. So I was talking about, and I've said it here on air, you know, that's one of the problems. Barely keep things going here as it is, and I don't have a house payment. Don't have a mortgage. The mansion is falling apart, but it still meets our needs. But if I had to go to, say, L.A., you know, my running gag is I couldn't afford a refrigerator box over a storm drain, because even that would be $1,200 a month. And I said that online, and somebody responded to me and said, ha! Silly girl. Refrigerators over storm drains in L.A. are going for $2,000 a month right now. It's sort of a bleak kind of humor. But anyway, back to Tim Gana in Australia. We need to see unemployment rise. Unemployment has to jump 40 to 50% in my view. We need to see some pain in the economy. We need to remind people, and of course we don't want any of the shareholders experiencing pain. There's only certain people that need to experience the pain, that's the slackers. We need to remind people that they work for the employer, not the other way around. Why, I bet he's got a certificate suitable for framing from the Milton Friedman fan club. There's been a systemic change where the employees feel that the employer is extremely lucky to have them, as opposed to the other way around. And if we did some massive layoffs, that would lead to, well, less arrogance in the employment market. Gee. And we wonder why working people need unions. I mean, we don't hear. Because Tim Gerner's not going to feel pain, the pain that he calls for. The shareholders aren't going to feel pain. The CFOs and CEOs and COOs are not going to feel pain. The board of directors is not going to feel pain. Now, somebody who can barely afford their rent right now, that's who he wants to feel the pain. But there's a confession in there, too. And the fact of the matter is the employers ought to be consider themselves lucky to have people willing to work for shit wages. And wages aren't nearly as shitty in Australia as they are here. They can't hold a candle to wages in, say, civilized countries like, oh, I don't know, Denmark. But Denmark's just not big enough. We need Denmark ideas here. Because they are, after all, the happiest country on earth. No, it's not Disney World. But Tim Gana doesn't like it because he's being made to feel not so special. And, of course, you billionaires always have to feel special. Right? Right. Yeah, moving, says David, South Carolina stand. Yeah. Just thinking about moving to be closer to my daughter. What a shock. All the states that we refer to as civilized are brutally expensive to live in. Now, the other side of that is that, you know, if you're coming from a West Virginia or a Alabama, maybe wages will be better in an Oregon or a Washington or a California. But I don't think wages are keeping up with the cost of housing. And there are potential fixes, but we're not particularly interested in them, especially not in the maggot states. Oh, and since we're almost at the end of the program, a kicker. A happy talk story. And God, this could be a 5-hour program this evening. So much stuff. This past Sunday night, thank you, Kevin, in Colorado Springs. Apparently, this last Sunday night, Clanny Oakley, no word on whether she packed heat into the venue. Clanny Oakley and someone, we don't know who, you know, she's getting a divorce from her former husband with the tattooed unit that he showed off to an underage kid in a bowling alley. Sunday night, she went to see Beetlejuice at a theater, you know, the traveling show, the musical, Beetlejuice, at a venue in downtown Denver. Officials with Denver Arts and Venues noting that two patrons were asked to leave the Buell Theater, which is owned by the city of Denver, during the performance of Beetlejuice as the Broadway show tours about the country. But they didn't just bounce them out on their ears. No, hell no. They gave them warnings. At intermission, they said, hey, y'all got to settle down. Because apparently this good, good, upstanding Christian woman was vaping, I wonder what, and singing and recording and causing a general disturbance during the performance. Generally speaking, you got to be kind of, and this is a complicated medical term, fucked up to be completely oblivious to everyone around you and singing along with the live performance on stage. Other theater goers had already complained. The report doesn't name the Clanny Oakley. But her campaign office, of course, bleating loudly that she didn't do any of that. Said, well, yeah, she was escorted from the Buell Theater Sunday night during Beetlejuice. And it's not legal, by the way, to record live performances, especially Broadway shows. And so about 5 minutes into the second act, once again, another theater goer said, hey, they're being really loud. They're ruining it for the rest of us, and we paid for tickets, too. And by the way, they're recording the show. So an usher was sent down to them. They said, well, we're not going to leave. The usher said, I told them they need to leave the theater. If they don't, they'll be trespassing. Well, we're not going to leave. Well, okay, I said, I'm going to go get the Denver PD. Go get them. I'll ask them if they know who I am. Meanwhile, because belligerence is everything, admit nothing, deny everything in maggot world. A spokes creep by the name of Drew Sexton, who serves as campaign manager for Bobblehead, said, I can confirm the stunning and salacious rumors. In her personal time, Congresswoman Lauren Boebert is indeed a supporter of the performing arts, gasp, and to the dismay of a select few, enthusiastically enjoyed a weekend performance of Beetlejuice. It was, after all, according to the reviews, a zany, outrageous, and a lusty riot. The Congresswoman would like to recommend that everybody see it. Everybody doesn't have that kind of money, Lore Lore. It's got a fantastic cast, tremendous visuals, and plenty of loud laughs, with a gentle reminder to leave their phones outside of the venue. Because he did say she was taking pictures, but she wasn't vaping. Yes, she was. Please, people of her district, manifest a little bit of common human self-respect. And send that toxic idiot packing. And I guess we should put a little bow on things. We started out with the impeachment inquiry. Well, wasn't long after Kevers, man of, with the spine of silly putty McCarthy, announced the impeachment inquiry thing, whatever it is, that the Washington Post got hold of a leaked transcript from an interview with one of the people who, an FBI agent, says, no, the main GOP witness is full of shit. And by the way, earlier this evening, Steve in New York pointed out with regard to Burisma, the Ukrainian oil and gas company. And look, I'll say this much. It bothered me that so much effort went into supporting Burisma because Burisma's purpose was to frack Ukraine. What a great idea. The issue which the U.S., EU, and countless good government NGOs had with the prior prosecutor in Ukraine was because he would not go after Burisma. The issue was that one of the ministry offices in Ukraine, I can't remember which, took bribes to give government contracts to Burisma. The prosecutor would not go after them, and the U.S., the EU, etc., pushed for the prosecutor's ouster as a condition for application to the EU or NATO, I can't remember which. All of which is true. And so, you know, when, what's his name, Scott Perry, was,
well, you know, it's all about the prosecutor. They wouldn't, you know, they fired the prosecutor because he was prosecuting Burisma.
No, it's the exact opposite. The prosecutor was shit-canned because he wouldn't go after Burisma. But, at any rate, the so-called whistleblowers attacked the U.S. attorney by name David Weiss. One of the alleged whistleblowers, Gary Shapley, every bit as credible as a three-card Monte dealer at the entrance to a subway or a metro station. Shapley said that Attorney Weiss blocked the IRS investigation in Hunter Biden. And he went on and said that Weiss told the FBI and IRS agents during a meeting that Weiss was not a deciding official on whether charges were filed. Well, this leads to Thomas Sobosinski, special agent in charge of the FBI's Baltimore field office, who was in that meeting, and said he never heard Weiss say that. And Weiss never needed approval to bring charges. I went into that meeting believing that he had the authority, and I've left that meeting believing he had the authority to bring charges. This is the guy who went on to prosecute and continues to prosecute Hunter Biden. But, of course, that's not really the goal. Jim Jacketoff Jordan's nefarious work led, according to Sobosinski, he said GOP publicity of the case has compromised the identity of some of the FBI agents involved. I now have FBI employees that names are out there. I have FBI employees and former FBI retired agents who've served for 20-plus years, whose parents are getting phone calls, whose photos with their girlfriends, who their children who are being followed. That's not something we were prepared for, and I was concerned about having that continue or expand to another one of my others of my employees. Because what this is at the end of the day is obstruction of justice. And this is how these thugs operate. So that's the program. I'm happy to say that we did get down to 11:40. We will be at 14:40 by tomorrow's program, barring a miracle of some degree. But thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening to bring it down as much as they, $110. That's fantastic. Thank you. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Roger in the chat room this evening. Thank you. To our news ninjas, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast, please, wherever you take it. Leave a comment for the algorithms. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice, over 20 years in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. We heard from Paul from Parts Unknown this evening, and he was incredibly helpful, exceptionally helpful. Get your booster. Paul said, have everything in place to have it by the 15th and no later than Halloween. Mask up now to avoid problems later. Groups over five, and if you're in a maggot state, that means just about any group that isn't your home. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse, maintain your social distance, as Paul pointed out. And if some really high dipshit sitting in a theater in Denver tells you that, I won't leave, I'm a patron of the arts, well, avoid Clanny Oakley like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Later.